Joining me in the studio now is Councillor Sean Haughey from Fianna Fáil. You're very welcome to Near FM, Sean. Thanks for coming in to us today.
Thanks very much, Mark. Always a pleasure.
I suppose we'll start from where we're going to start. An exciting week.
Yeah, I became a candidate in the general election. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was a surprise. I think there was a lot of speculation the summer that I won't be added to the ticket. So mm-hmm. I'm delighted that the position has now been formalised.
Yeah, and I don't want to put you on the spot to be speaking for anybody else anyway, but your colleague Deirdre Heaney had expressed a little bit of disappointment in you being added to the ticket. You probably, I suppose, weren't surprised that I've been disappointed, but do you think it's something you can walk through?
Yes, I think from the public's point of view, they don't like internal party squabbling in public. I think it's time to move on now. I suppose I can understand Deirdre's disappointment, but it's a very competitive game, and I think that Fianna Fáil were always going to run two candidates because it's such a huge constituency. So it's time to move on from that particular row.
It is a huge constituency. It's going to be very competitive. Deirdre feels, I heard her saying during the week, that you might be running the risk of splitting the vote. Do you think that's the case, or do you think you'll ultimately unite the vote?
Yeah, I think it is important to run two candidates, and there is a big effort now to increase the number of women on party tickets. Mm-hmm. So from the Fianna Fáil point of view, we have a man and a woman on our ticket. I think that gives people a choice. I think it is important to run two candidates, and I think in the event of one being eliminated, there will be a good transfer between the two of us. So I don't think it's a particular problem from a strategic party point of view.
Yeah. Now, Dublin North Bay, it's a new constituency, massive as you say, 5 seats up for grabs, and an awful lot of big hitters in there. It really is going to be one of the showpiece constituencies come election, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think it's become a very high profile constituency and a weather vane constituency as well, because it's a 5-seater in Dublin, and you know, takes in many different areas. I think it'll be closely watched, and at present there's 6 TDs now. One TD is retiring, Sean Kenny, so there's 5 sitting TDs seeking re-election, and then there's the rest of us as well. So it'll be competitive. I think the count will go on long into the night and maybe the early morning as well.
We might be sitting up for that one, alright. I think looking forward to the election now, and I mean you've gone through election campaigns before. Does this one feel very different?
It does, yeah. I wasn't elected to the Dáil in 2011, but in actual fact, I think that has been a benefit to me, because it allows you to take stock, and it allows you to see Dáil Éireann from the outside looking in, and you do actually realise there's an awful lot of rubbish goes on in there, a lot of grandstanding and so forth. So I've used the time to reflect and to, you know, to come up with new ideas for the various problems that confront us. So it's onwards and upwards.
You know, this election to me has a feel that the landscape of the politics in this country has kind of shifted a little bit. We see there's a very, very, very much an anti-established party feeling out there amongst people, especially in working class areas. The difficulties obviously expected, I mean, you're going to hear about water, you're going to hear about homelessness, you're going to hear about all kinds of other things, jobs and things like that. What kind of welcome do you expect you're going to get on the doorsteps?
Well, I think our political system is certainly fragmented. I've noticed that on Dublin City Council now. Mm-hmm. There's so many different parties and independents. And actually, you know, I would worry about our political stability, you know, how a new government is going to be formed. I don't think we can take political stability for granted. So I think people will think long and hard about what government they want to elect after the general election. From my own point of view, I'm encouraged by the reception I'm receiving about the place. I think I don't like admitting it, but I was elected to Dublin City Council 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think I've built up a reputation of efficiency, accessibility, and I will be relying on that, obviously, and building on that support.
Yeah, because Fianna Fáil have been in opposition now for 5 years, but there is still that feeling out there amongst a lot of people. If you listen to what some of the commentators and the way some people talk, is that Fianna Fáil are still very, very much associated with the crash. How do you think it's got? How difficult do you think it's going to be to break through that and to get people to probably trust the party again?
Yeah, well, obviously the party was definitely punished in 2011. Yeah. We lost over 50 seats, so we have been punished, and the party has apologised, and it's now trying very hard to regain the trust of the electorate, coming up with new policies. But I think this government have been in power for 5 years too, so it's wearing a bit thin. The government saying it's all Fianna Fáil's fault. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to be accountable for their stewardship over the last 5 years, and I think there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the way they've handled things too.
Yeah, but isn't that then, I think, what ultimately feeds into the all of these other parties that are these anti-establishment parties, if you want to call them that, springing up, because people are looking at Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, even Labour now, and going same old, same old.
Yeah, I think there is an anti-party thing. There's a view among the electorate that parties are out for themselves, and they're not actually out for the people. So I think people will think long and hard. There's going to be an element of people voting for personalities and individuals, and individuals that they can trust as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm never going to turn my back on my party, given my heritage.
Absolutely.
Two family members have led the party down through the years. But I think people, they're not as committed to parties, that's for sure, and they will look at individuals and personalities and see if they can trust them.
Yeah, it's going to be hugely interesting. It really, really is. Look at some of the issues. I mean, like, straight up homelessness now, we'll tackle that first. You know, we know we have a homelessness crisis in this country. And again, the current government points to the previous government and saying they did nothing about it, and the current opposition point to the previous government, the current government, and they're saying, well, you're not doing anything about it either. And when you get to the doorsteps, and the people you're going to be talking to and the people who are going to be voting in this election are all going to say, is anyone going to do anything about it?
Well, the point is, we, as of today, at this point in time, we do have a crisis in relation to homelessness. Now, leave aside the social housing issue, there's 550 families in emergency accommodation this day, and 360 of those families are in hotels.
Yeah.
So the Minister, Alan Kelly, has to bang heads together with the local authorities, with the homeless agencies, with the Department of Social Protection, with his colleague Joan Burton, who is in charge of rent allowances. So I just don't see the bureaucracy being tackled to deal with this immediate crisis that we have at this point in time.
Yeah. And that's what I think leads ultimately into the frustration of people, is that, you know, we see the problem. Why isn't someone fixing it? So somebody fix it. And, you know, you quite rightly then, he says the homelessness is one issue, and I deliberately left them separate because they are separate issues. The social housing then, because kind of one feeds into the other. There's an awful lot of people are still trapped in negative equity, and if they had an option of maybe going down the social housing route, they can sort out whatever they need to do with their banks and their mortgages and everything else, and they have an option to put another roof over their heads. Currently the option is either you sort out your business with your bank or you get out.
Yeah, and a lot of people, the housing and homeless are related. A lot of people are becoming homeless because the rents are going up and up and up. The rent supplements are not keeping pace, and they can't pay the rent anymore. Or in another situation, the landlord has to sell his or her house because the banks want their money. So there's lots of different scenarios. So it is all interrelated. Yeah, there is a housing crisis as well. Basically, not enough social housing. Not enough social housing is under construction, and not enough houses in general are under construction. So okay, yes, certainly successive governments can take some blame for that, but I think over the last 5 years, I think this problem should have been foreseen. We're going right back into the same problems that we had before.
Absolutely. And again then, and it'd probably be contradictory of me to say this, but foresight is or hindsight is 2020 vision, but foresight is invaluable, I suppose. We have a desperate need for homes. We have a desperate need for homes to be built, and built quickly. Are we therefore then running the risk that we're charging back down the road well travelled, and we're going to get ourselves back into the same cycle of property and boom that got us into trouble in the first place? Do we have to be wary that we don't go back that way as well?
Oh, we certainly have to be wary. We don't want any more priory halls,
for example.
You know, housing standards. As a city councillor now, this coming week, we are dealing with the development plan, housing standards. city officials are trying to increase densities and so forth. So we have to be very careful in relation to the building regulations. And the central bank have brought in guidelines in relation to lending, and that seems to have cooled the property price escalation as well. So, you know, we certainly have to try and avoid the mistakes of the past.
Yeah, I mean, in our own area, I mean, I live up there in Clare Hall, and up around me now, there's been a huge increase in building. There's a lot of new homes being built. They're being built for private sale. They're very expensive, some of them. There's some of them just there up on Balgriffin, just beside the cemetery there, and they're going for over £500,000, or €500,000, excuse me, which is, it's €500,000. Mm-hmm. It's an awful lot of money for a family home, for people who, you know, when you think, if the bank is only going to lend them 80%, they have to find 20% of £500,000, which is €100,000.
Yes.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's to get the balance right, that you don't want to go back to a property bubble again, and yet people have to be able to obtain affordable housing. Mm-hmm. So it's a balance. Yeah. So I think you need to get all the elements in place and provide affordable housing as well, and schemes to allow people obtain affordable housing. But it's going to take a lot of thought and effort.
Yeah. And most definitely, it's going to be one of the most talked about issues with this election campaign. The other one, of course, is going to be water. You know, we've all seen what's happened with regards to Irish Water over the last year or two. You know, people have absolutely united in their opposition to water and water charges. Lots of people are going to promise if they get elected that they'll get rid of them. I don't necessarily know that it's going to be that easy. But water is obviously going to be another thing that you're going to hear a lot about on the doorsteps and on the campaign trail. How do you think that's going to play out? And, you know, given that it's going to run into the next Dáil anyway, this current situation with non-payment and everything else, how is a new administration going to tackle that? How would Fianna Fáil tackle that if you were in government?
People are obviously very angry about it. The government rushed through the legislation on the eve of Christmas one year to set up Irish Water, and gradually the facts emerged about the company and all the bonuses and the waste of money and so forth. So it's certainly going to be a big issue, and it feeds into the whole incompetence of government. Fianna Fáil are committed to the abolition of Irish Water and the water charges. Because we feel that people shouldn't be asked to pay for a service until the service is up to scratch. Mm-hmm. Then, at some stage down the road, people might consider charges, but not under the current system. And I think after the election, you know, with all the parties coming together to form a government, I would be surprised if Irish Water survives that process, I have to say.
Yeah, because I think when in the COLA today, I think, as you say, it's how the whole process was done is what people are really angry about. I think if people had been given the water charges issue in a better way, had been put forward to them in a better way, people are scared of things like privatisation, which this, you know, you can certainly see how Irish Water has been set up could be privatised in 5 years' time, and then we're at the will of whoever. You know, so I think it wasn't just people were saying, hell no, we won't pay. I think what people were really saying was, this isn't right, you know. Give us a system, a fair system, and most people are fair. Mm-hmm. and they have paid more than their fair share in the last 8-10 years or whatever. And I think they would have taken to the water charges fairly if it had been done fairly and given to them fairly. And I think it's the unfairness of the perceived unfairness of how it was put together is what has people really angry.
I think you're right there. I think there was a lot of incompetence. I mean, the position kept changing week after week after week in relation to the charges. Initially, when the charges were brought in, most families had no idea how much they were going to pay. They didn't know whether they were paying €100, €500, €700. It just wasn't clear. It wasn't explained to people properly. So from the word go, it lost the goodwill of the people.
The current situation in Europe, the migration situation, again, people in Ireland, lots of people in Ireland are saying, we have lots of problems here. And, you know, I personally don't believe that it's an either-or situation. Lots of people seem to be at the fall into that trap, it's an either-or situation. But the current migration crisis in Europe, and, you know, I think the figure now on the refugees that are only going to take in is somewhere around the 4,000 mark. do you believe we're right to be opening our doors? And I know that's a very contentious and hard question like that, but you know, it's a very emotive issue. And you know, I've read stuff on social media this week, and I've been shocked at how vociferous people are in objection to us taking any of them. It would come as a bit of a surprise to me. Are we right to be opening our doors to those refugees?
Well, I think this issue is certainly jogging all our consciences. Yeah. The government have committed to taking in 4,000 refugees from Syria, and that initially they will be accommodated in reception and orientation centres. Mm-hmm. Now, there is genuine concerns out there. I've had email correspondence from both sides of the argument. Mm-hmm. People who say, you know, we must be caring and compassionate, mm-hmm. and that's a very valid view. And then there's concern among people on housing lists. Yeah. And homeless lists, you know, is this going to affect my place on the local authority housing list? So I think, like Irish Water, the position needs to be explained to people very clearly. I think we're right, you know, given our history, but I do think we need to get the financial resources from the EU, which I understand they're putting up about half the money required.
Yeah.
And I think that the long term plan for these refugees needs to be clearly set out, I don't think they should end up on the local authority housing list. Perhaps some of them will go home in due course. I don't know, but I think if the position is explained to people clearly that there's no need to worry about it, I think that would help.
I think you're 100% correct. It's, a lot of people don't understand how the whole system works in this situation. I mean, lots of people who've spoken in the last week or so aren't even aware about direct provision, for example. You know, they aren't aware of how that system works, how people are in that for 8, 10, 12 years or whatever. So different things like that, I think people get scared and they panic, and they just, so again, these things are very much need to be explained and explained clearly to people, so as we know, because as I say, I don't believe it's an either or situation. We're not ignoring that to look after this,
yes,
but we need to make the position clear to people. Anyway, Sean, look, you're on the campaign trail as of now, I'd imagine.
Yes, yeah, out and about, all right. Yeah.
Are you expecting to be going to the polls before Christmas or after?
It's very hard to say. There's two schools of thought, you know. One is that the election will be held quite quickly in October or November, or mm-hmm. then the other is February or March. Yeah. So I expect the teacher is keeping his options open on it, depending on events, my dear boy, events.
Yes.
But anyway, I'm up and running and ready to go and knocking on doors, and I'll just be putting my best foot forward and hoping to gain the trust of the electorate
sit
in the next stall.
Yeah, I think personally it's the budget is going to be the marker. Whatever way the budget comes across, whatever way people perceive the budget, I think that might kind of be the catalyst for whether we go early or late. Well, Sean, look, thanks for coming in and talking to us. I know that we'll get talking to you again between now and Poland Day, and hopefully after as well. And should we wish you the best of luck, and we'll talk to you again. Take care.
Thanks very much, Mark. Thank you.
Cheers, Sean. Take care. Bye-bye.